the knocking on her window. She looked and saw the gun facing her head. In her peripheral vision, she saw someone else at the window on the passenger side.
"It's okay,"
the man's voice was hard to hear through the window.
"We aren't here to hurt you."
How had the man gotten to the side of her car so fast? He couldn't have gotten out of the van. There wasn't that kind of time. This had been carefully orchestrated. Someone had realized that she would be at the Soleimani Recovery Center. The road was quiet, very little traffic. So these two men had probably been hiding behind a tree. The van cuts her off. They step out. Maya just sat very still and considered her options.
"Please step out of the car and come with us."
Option one, reach for the gear and shift the car in reverse. Option two, go for the gun in the hip holster. The problem with both options was simple. The man had his gun at her head. Maybe his friend by the other window did too. She wasn't Wyatt Earp, and this wasn't the OK Corral. If the man wanted to shoot her, she would have no chance of reaching either the gun or the gear shift in time. Which left option three. Get out of the car. That was when the man with the gun said,
"Come on, Joe is waiting."
The side door of the van began to slide open. Sitting in her car, both hands on the wheel, Maya could feel her heart pounding against her ribcage. The van door stopped halfway. Maya squinted, but she couldn't see inside. She turned to the man with the gun. "Joe?" she said.
"Yeah,"
the man said, his voice suddenly tender.
"Come on. You want to see him, right?"
She looked at the man's face for the first time. Then she looked at the other man. He didn't have a gun in his hand. Option three. Maya started to cry.
"Mrs. Burkett?"
Through the tears, she said, "Joe."
"Yes,"
the man's voice grew insistent.
"Unlock the door, Mrs. Burkett."
Still crying, Maya weakly fumbled for the unlock button. She pressed it and pulled the door handle. The man stepped back to let the door swing. He still had the gun on her. Maya half fell out of the car. The gunman started to reach for her arm, but Maya, still with the tears, shook her head and said, "No need." She straightened up and then stumbled toward the van. The gunman let her go. And that told Maya everything. The van door slid open a little bit more. Four men, Maya calculated. The driver, the van door opener, the passenger side guy, the gunman. As she got closer to the van, all her training, all those hours in the simulator and at the shoot house started to kick in. She felt an odd calm now, a moment of near zen, that feeling when you are in the eye of the hurricane. It was all about to happen now, and one way or the other, if she came out of it alive or dead, she was being proactive. She wasn't controlling her own destiny. That sort of thinking was nonsense. But when you've trained and when you're prepared, you can act with a sort of comforting confidence. Still stumbling, Maya turned her head just a little, just the slightest bit, because what she saw now would decide everything. The gunman had not grabbed hold of her when she got out of the car. That was the reason she had poured on the fake tears and semi-hysterics, to see how he would react. He had fallen for it. He had let her go. He hadn't frisked her. That meant three things. She glanced behind her. The man had indeed lowered his gun to his side. He had relaxed. He felt she was no longer an active threat. One. No one had warned the man that she'd be armed. Maya had been planning the sequence from the moment she started with the tears. The tears were designed to act as a weapon, to make the kidnappers relax, to make them underestimate her, to give her time before getting out of the car to plan exactly what she would do. Two, Joe would know that she'd be armed. Her hand was already near her hip as she started to run. Here's a fun fact most people don't know. Shooting a handgun with accuracy is difficult. Shooting a handgun at a moving target is very difficult. 76% of the time, trained police officers miss the shot between 3 and 9 feet. The percentage is north of 90% for civilians. So you always moved. Maya looked toward the back of the van. Then, without so much as a misstep or warning or even hesitation, she tucked into a roll, hit the pavement as she pulled her Glock out of its holster, and came up aiming directly at the man with the gun. The man had noticed the move, had started to react, but it was too late. Maya aimed for the center of his chest. In real life, you never shoot to wound. You point the weapon at the center of the chest, the largest target, the best chance of hitting at least something should your aim be off, and you just keep firing. Which is what Maya did. The man went down. 3, the conclusion. Joe had not sent them. Several things happened at once. Maya kept rolling, kept moving so she wasn't a stationary target. She turned to where the other man was, the one who had been at her passenger side. She swung her gun up, ready to fire, but the man ducked away behind her car. Keep moving, Maya. The van door slammed shut. The engine roared to life. Maya was behind it now, using it as a shield in case the other guy came up firing. She obviously couldn't stay. The van was about to move, probably in reverse, probably trying to crush her. Maya made the instinctive decision. Flee. The man with the gun was down. The guys in the van were panicking. The final man was hidden behind her. When in doubt, do the simple thing. Using the van as something of a shield, Maya ran into the woods. The van shot backward, almost hitting her. Maya stayed to its side and then, fully blocked off from the guy by her passenger door, she turned and ran the last few feet. Don't stop. The woods were too thick for her to look behind her while she was running, but at some point she ducked behind a tree and risked a quick look. The man who had been hiding behind the passenger seat was not following her. He sprinted straight for the van and dove in while the van was still moving. The van completed the K-turn and, with tires peeling the pavement, shot back down the road. They had left the gunman she had shot by the side of the road. The entire episode, from the moment Maya tucked and rolled until now, had probably taken fewer than 10 seconds. Now what? The decision took almost no time. She had no choice, really. If she called it in or waited for the authorities, she would certainly be arrested. Being in the park when Joe was shot, finding Tom Douglas, the ballistics tests, now another man shot with her own gun, there would be no quick explanation. She hurried back to the road. The gunman was flat on his back, legs splayed. He could be faking it, but Maya doubted it. Still, she kept her gun at the ready. No need. He was dead. She had killed the man. No time to dwell on that. A car would be coming any second. She quickly went through his pockets and grabbed his wallet. No time to check his ID now. She debated grabbing his phone. She wouldn't be able to use hers anymore, but that seemed too risky for obvious reasons. Finally, she considered taking his gun, which was still clutched in his hand, but that was really the only evidence, if everything else went south, that she had acted in self-defense. Plus, she still had her Glock. She had already done the calculations in her head. The gunman's body was near the side of the road. It wouldn't take much to push it 2 or 3 feet and then let it roll down the embankment. With one quick glance to make sure no cars were approaching, that was exactly what Maya did. The gunman rolled more easily than she would have thought, or maybe adrenaline had made her stronger. He slid straight down, his limp body smacking into a tree. He was, at least temporarily, out of sight. The body would be found, of course. Maybe in an hour, maybe in a day. But in the meantime, it would buy Maya enough time. She rushed back to her car and slid into the driver's seat. Her phone was going crazy now. Shane calling her back. probably Kearse starting to wonder what the hell was going on, too. In the distance, a car started coming toward her. Maya kept her calm. She started up her car and gently hit the accelerator. She was just another visitor departing the Soleimani Recovery Center. If there were CCTV cameras anywhere nearby, they would show a van speeding off and then, a minute or two later, a normal driving BMW that had an excuse to be in the area driving by. Deep breaths, Maya. In and out. Flex. Relax. 5 minutes later, she was back on the highway. Maya put some distance between herself and the dead body. She turned off her phone, and then, because she wasn't sure if the phone could still be tracked, she smashed it against the steering wheel. 30 miles later, she stopped in a CVS parking lot. She checked the gunman's wallet. No ID, but he did have $400 in cash. Perfect. Maya was low and didn't want to use an ATM. She bought 3 disposable cell phones and a baseball cap with the cash. She checked her face in the store's bathroom mirror. A disaster. She washed up as best she could and threw her hair into a ponytail. She put the cap on and came out looking presentable. Where would the kidnappers go? They were probably no longer a threat. There was an outside chance that they'd go to her house and wait for her, but that seemed very risky. The van was likely stolen, or a rental, or had fake plates, something. So they would probably just call it a day. Still, she had no intention of going to her house. She called Eddie. He answered on the second ring. She told him where to meet her. He said that he was on his way and mercifully didn't ask any follow-up questions. This, too, was a risk, but it was minimal. Still, when she got closer to the grown-up daycare, she gave the surroundings a serious examination. Interestingly enough, growing up was almost set up the way you might an army base. You really couldn't approach it without being seen. There were layers of security. Sure, someone could shoot their way in, but really, with the buzz-locked doors by the entranceway and into each room, you'd be able to contact authorities, the police station was a block away, in no time. She circled one more time. Nothing suspicious. When she saw Eddie's car enter the lot, she pulled in behind him. The Glock was back in her waistband. Eddie parked. Maya parked next to him and got out of the car. She slid into the passenger seat next to him.
What's going on, Maya?
I need to sign you up so you're able to pick up Lily.
And that weird phone number you called me from?
Let's just do this, okay? Eddie looked at her.
Do you know who killed Claire and Joe?
Yes. He waited. Then he said,
But you won't tell me.
Not right now, no.
Because?
Because I don't have time. Because Claire wanted to protect you.
Maybe I don't want to be protected.
It doesn't work like that.
Like hell it doesn't. Maybe it's time I helped.
Right now, she said, you can help by coming inside with me. She reached for the knob and pulled it. With a heavy sigh, Eddie did the same thing. When he turned his back, when he started to step out of the car, Maya jammed an envelope into the bottom of his laptop bag. Then she got out, too. Miss Kitty buzzed them in and helped them fill out the paperwork. As they took the ID photograph of Eddie, Maya looked into the sun-bright yellow room and spotted her daughter. Seeing Lily made her heart feel suddenly light. Lily wore a smock, one of Maya's old shirts, and her hands were covered in paint. There was a big smile on the little girl's face. Maya stood there and felt a hand reach inside her chest and squeeze. Miss Kitty came up behind her.
Do you want to go inside and say hello?
Maya shook her head. Are we done here?
We are. Your brother-in-law can now pick her up at any point. I don't have to call to give him permission. That was what you requested, right?
It is.
And that's what we've done.
Maya nodded, her eyes still on Lily. She took one more look at her daughter and started to turn away. She faced Miss Kitty.
Thank you.
Are you all right?
I'm fine.
She looked past her at Eddie. We better go. When they were both out in the parking lot, Maya asked to borrow Eddie's phone. He handed it to her without objection. She signed into her GPS tracking app via the website. Hector's truck was back at that Patterson location. Good. Time to stay proactive. She debated asking Eddie if she could keep his phone, but someone might eventually figure that out and track it. She handed it back to him. Thank you.
Are you going to tell me what's going on?
When they reached their cars, Maya said, Wait a second. She opened the back of her car, found the toolbox, took out a screwdriver.
What are you doing?
Eddie asked. I'm switching our license plates. She didn't think Kearse would put an APB out on her yet, but there was no harm in being overcautious. Maya started on the front bumper. Eddie took out a dime, used it as a screwdriver, and started on the back. 2 minutes later, they were done. She started to get back into her car. Eddie just stood there and watched her. Maya stopped for a second. There were a million things she wanted to tell him, about Claire, about Joe, about everything. She opened her mouth, but she of all people should know that nothing good would come out of it. Not today. Not now. I love you, Eddie. He used his hand to shade the sunset from his eyes.
I love you too, Maya.
She got into the car and started for Patterson. Chapter 32. She found Hector's Dodge Ram in a parking lot of a high-rise on Fulton Street in Patterson. Maya parked on the street and walked past the gate. She checked the Dodge Ram's doors, hoping one might be unlocked. No luck. She debated what to do. There was no way to find out where Hector was in the building. She also didn't know if he was with Isabella or not. It was too late to care about that. Her goal now was simple. She would make Hector tell her where Isabella was. So Maya got back in her car and waited. She kept her eyes on the high-rise entrance, shifting her gaze every once in a while to Hector's pickup in case he came toward it from another direction. Half an hour passed. She wished that she had some kind of internet access. She wanted to see if Corey, as she expected, had started to post some details about EAC Pharmaceuticals, but her cell phone was smashed, and the throwaways only had phone and texting service. She bet that he had. It would explain the attempted kidnapping. Corey had posted parts of the story, and now someone, probably a Burkett, was trying to clean up any loose ends. Hector appeared at the door. Maya already had the gun out of her holster. Hector lifted his key fob and pressed the button. The truck lights blinked, unlocking the door. Hector looked troubled, but then again, this was not a man who often looked relaxed or happy. Maya's plan was pretty simple. Follow Hector to his car, sneak up on him, stick the gun in his face, make him take her to Isabella. It wasn't exactly a subtle plan, but there was no time for that. But as Maya started toward him, coming toward him from the truck's rear, she realized that that might not be necessary. Isabella walked out of the entrance, too. Bingo. Maya ducked behind a car. So now what? Did she wait for Hector to leave before making her move? If she stuck a gun in Isabella's face with Hector still there, how would he react? Not well, she imagined. He had a mobile phone. He could call for help or shout or mess it up somehow. No, Maya would have to wait for him to leave. Hector slid into his truck. Staying low, Maya moved a car closer. She kept the gun out of sight. She hoped that nobody would see her skulking about, but if they did, it would only arouse suspicion, not confirm it. She doubted that they would call the cops, but that was a chance she'd have to take. Isabella veered to her left. Wait, hold up. Maya had thought Isabella had come out to wave goodbye, or maybe have a last word with her brother through his truck window. But that wasn't the case. Isabella was getting in on the passenger side of the truck. Maya had two choices here. One, go back to her car and follow them. She would seriously consider doing just that, following the truck, but she was afraid that she'd lose them, and without her cell phone, she could no longer track them. Two, enough. She hurried to the truck, flung open the back door, slid in, and placed the muzzle of the gun at the back of Hector's head. Hands on the wheel. Then, pointing the gun at Isabella before returning it to Hector's skull. You too, Isabella. Hands on the dashboard. Both stared at her in shock for a moment. Now. They slowly moved their hands to where she wanted. Remembering how she had underestimated Isabella the last time they tangoed, Maya reached forward and grabbed Isabella's pocketbook. She peered inside. Yep, there was pepper spray as well as her mobile phone. Hector's mobile was in the cup holder. Maya grabbed it and threw it in Isabella's bag. She wondered whether Hector was carrying. Keeping the gun on him, she quickly patted him down in the obvious places. Nothing. She grabbed the truck's key and put it in the same bag, too. She dropped the bag on the floor in front of her, and that was when she saw something that made her pull up. It was a color that caught her eye. What do you want? Isabella asked. There was a pile of clothes on the floor behind the driver's seat. You can't just put a gun. Shut up, Maya said. If you so much as breathe, I'll blow Hector's head off. There was a gray sweatshirt on the top of the pile. She pushed it away with her foot. And there, coming into view so clear she almost pulled the trigger in rage, was a too familiar forest green button-down shirt. Talk, Maya said. Isabella glared at her. Last chance. I have nothing to say. Maya started talking instead. Hector's about Joe's height and build. So I assume he played the part of Joe in your video? You let him into the house. He acted out the scene. Lily knew Hector. She would go to him willingly. Then you just got a videotape of Joe's face from... That smile. The one he flashed on the video. My God, was that from our wedding video? We have nothing to say to you, Isabella said. You won't kill us. Enough. Gripping the gun harder, Maya brought the metal butt down hard on Hector's nose. The break was audible. Hector howled. Blood seeped through his fingers. Maybe I won't kill you, Maya said. But the first bullet goes into his shoulder. Then his elbow, then his knee. So start talking. Isabella hesitated. Maya reared back the gun and smacked Hector again, this time on the side of his ear. He groaned and fell to the side. Instinctively, Isabella took her hands off the dashboard, trying to reach her brother. Maya pistol-whipped her across the face, pulling up on the power enough so that it hurt, but didn't cause any serious damage. Still, Isabella was bleeding now, too. Then Maya pressed the muzzle of the gun on Hector's shoulder and started to squeeze the trigger.
Wait!
Isabella shouted. Maya didn't move.
We did it because you killed Joe!
Maya kept the muzzle in place.
Who told you that? What difference does it make? You think I killed my own husband,
Maya said, nodding at the gun in her hand.
So why would you think I won't just shoot your brother?
It was our mother.
Hector was talking now.
She said you killed Joe. She said we had to help prove it.
Help how?
Hector sat up.
You didn't kill him?
Help how, Hector?
Like you said, I dressed up as Joe. We let your nanny cam tape it. I took the SD card back to Farnwood. The family had hired a CGI Photoshop guy. An hour later, I came back to the house with it. Isabella put it in the frame.
Wait, Maya said. How did you know I had a nanny cam? Isabella made a scoffing noise.
Suddenly, the day after the funeral, you have a new digital frame already loaded up with pictures of your family? Please. You're the only mother I know that doesn't keep any pictures of her daughter around. You don't even hang up her artwork. So when I saw that frame, how stupid do you think I am?
Maya remembered now how good Isabella had been on those videos, always smiling and engaged.
So you what, told your mother about it?
Isabella didn't bother answering.
And I assume it was her idea for you to hit me with the pepper spray.
I didn't know what you'd be like after you saw it. I was just supposed to get the SD card from you, so you couldn't show it to other people.
They wanted her isolated.
If you showed it to me, Isabella continued, I was supposed to pretend I didn't see it.
Why?
Why do you think?
But it was obvious. I was supposed to slip up, start questioning my sanity. Maya's voice drifted off. She stared straight past them now, straight through the truck's windshield. Isabella and Hector looked at her, then turned to see what had captured her attention. Standing there, directly in front of Hector's truck, was Shane. If you move, Maya said to Hector and Isabella, I'll shoot you dead. She opened the back door, got out, and reached back to take Isabella's pocketbook with her. Shane just stood there and waited for her. His eyes looked red.
What are you doing? Shane asked.
They set me up, Maya said.
What?
Hector wore Joe's clothes. Then someone photoshopped his face from a video.
So Joe is
dead? Yes. How did you find me, Shane?
GPS.
I don't have my phone with me.
I put trackers on both your cars, Shane said.
Why did you do that?
Because you haven't been acting rationally, he said. Even before that nanny cam thing, you have to see that.
Maya said nothing.
So yeah, I was the one who called Dr. Wu. I thought maybe he could get you back into therapy. And yeah, I put the trackers on your car in case you needed help. Then when Kearse contacted me about those ballistic tests and you wouldn't answer my calls.
She looked back at the pickup truck. No movement. Deep breaths. There's something I need to tell you, Shane.
About the ballistics test.
She shook her head. Flex. Relax. About that day over Alcom. Shane looked confused.
What about it?
She opened her mouth, closed it.
Maya?
We had already lost men. Good men. I wasn't going to let us lose any more. Her eyes started welling up.
I know,
Shane said.
That was our mission.
And then we spotted that SUV. And I'm listening to our guys pleading for help, and that SUV is bearing down on them. We set the target, we called it in, but they wouldn't let us engage.
Right, Shane said. They wanted to make sure they weren't civilians.
Maya nodded.
So we waited, Shane said,
while those boys pleaded for their lives. The side of Shane's mouth twitched.
It was tough listening to that, I know. But we did what was right. We waited. We followed protocol. It wasn't our fault that those civilians died. When we got confirmation,
Maya shook her head. We never got confirmation. Shane stopped and looked at her. I turned your signal off.
What? What are you?
JOC radioed back for us to hold off. He shook his head.
What are you talking about?
They didn't give us the go-ahead. They believed that at least one of the people in the SUV was a civilian, possibly underage. They radioed that it was only about 50-50 that the people in the SUV were the enemy. Shane's breathing had grown ragtag.
But I heard...
No, you didn't, Shane. I relayed it to you, remember? He just stood there. You think what's on the audio tape would be bad for us because we sounded celebratory after we destroyed the target. But that wasn't what Corey had on me. He had the radio call telling me that there could be civilians in that SUV.
And you shot anyway, Shane said.
Yes.
Why?
Because I didn't care about the civilians, Maya said. I cared about our boys.
Jesus, Maya.
I made a choice. I wasn't going to lose another one of ours, not on my watch, not if I could help it. And if civilians died, if there was collateral damage, so be it. I didn't care anymore. That's the truth. You think I have these horrible flashbacks because I feel guilty about those dead civilians? It's just the opposite, Shane. I have them because I don't feel guilty. Those deaths don't haunt me. What haunts me, Shane, what lingers inside me, is the knowledge that if I was up there again, I would do the exact same thing. Now Shane had tears in his eyes. So you don't have to be a shrink to figure it out. I'm forced to relive what happened every night, but I can never change the outcome. That's why those flashbacks won't ever leave me, Shane. Every night I'm back on that chopper. Every night I try to find a way to save those soldiers.
And every night you kill those civilians again, Shane said. Oh, Christ.
He stepped toward her, arms open, but she shook him off. There was no way she could handle that. She quickly turned around and looked behind her. Isabella and Hector still hadn't moved. It was time to get going. What did Kearse tell you, Shane?
Joe and Claire were killed by the same gun, Shane said. You knew that already, right? Kearse told you?
Maya nodded.
But you didn't tell me, Maya.
She didn't bother replying.
You told me everything except the results of that ballistics test.
Shane,
I figured that you were working on your own to find Claire's killer. The cops were useless. I figured that you came up with something.
Maya kept her eyes on the pickup truck. It wasn't so she could keep an eye on Hector and Isabella, so much as that she couldn't face Shane.
You gave me that bullet before Joe was shot, Shane said. You asked me to see if it came from the same weapon that murdered Claire. It matched. You wouldn't tell me how you got it. And now I know the same weapon killed Joe, too. How can that be?
Only one way, Maya said. Shane shook his head, but he already knew. She met his eye and held it. I killed him, Maya said. I killed Joe. Chapter 33. Maya wore the baseball cap and drove Hector's pickup truck. She headed to Farnwood via the back gate and made her way to the main house. Darkness had fallen. Security was still around, but it was pretty lax. No one questioned or bothered to stop the familiar Dodge Ram. Shane was holding Hector and Isabella to make sure that they didn't warn anyone of her arrival at the mansion. Using the throwaway cell phone, Maya called Leather and Lace and asked for Lulu.
I can't help you anymore,
Lulu said. I think you can. After she hung up, Maya parked to the side of the main house. The grounds were dark. She crept to the back and tried the kitchen door. It was unlocked. The house was empty and still. No lights had been kept on. Maya moved toward the fireplace and paused. Then she sat alone in the front parlor and waited. Time passed. Her eyes adjusted to the dark. She saw the past, all in snap flashes. But it was the first one, the opening of the gun safe, that changed everything. She had been overseas and home for the first time since Claire's death. She visited the gravesite. Joe had driven her. He had been acting odd, but that really hadn't set her off much. She was starting to wonder about him, though, about how little time they had actually spent together, what with the whirlwind romance, her service, his work. But again, that wouldn't have meant anything to her. Was she thinking that she really didn't know the man very well? No. She only thought that now, in hindsight. It was opening the gun safe that changed everything. Maya was meticulous when it came to her guns. She kept them sparkling clean, and so the moment she took out her Smith & Wesson 686s, she knew something for certain. One of them, the one she kept in the hidden compartment, had been used.
Joe had reiterated when she'd come home how he hated guns, that he had no interest in going with her to the range, that he really wished that she didn't keep them in the house. In short, he doth protest too much. It was odd, looking back on it, why a man who had no interest in guns would still want to have his fingerprint in the safe database.
Just in case, Joe had said. You never know.
There are moments in life when everything changes. It was again like one of those optical illusions. You see only one thing, and then you shift something just a little, and everything changes. That was how she felt, holding this gun that someone who clearly didn't know what they were doing had tried to clean. It was a gut punch. It was a betrayal of the worst kind. Sleeping with the enemy, she felt a fool and worse. And yet it also made terrible, horrible sense somehow. She knew. Even as she went into denial, she knew that this gun, her own gun, had killed her sister. She knew it even before she went to the range and shot it and brought the bullet to Shane. She knew even before she talked Shane into secretly testing it against the .38 found in Claire's skull. Joe had killed Claire. Still, there was a chance she was wrong. There was a chance a clever hitman had broken into the safe, used her gun, put it back. There was a chance it wasn't Joe at all. That was why she switched the two Smith & Wesson 686s, putting the one Joe had taken from the safe's hidden compartment for out-of-state purchases and switching it with the one registered in New Jersey that she kept in plain view. She made sure none of her other guns were loaded or had ammunition. Only the Smith & Wesson in the hidden compartment. She started digging through Joe's stuff and intentionally left clues that she had done so. Maya wanted him to know that she was onto him, to see if he would react, to get enough information to make him tell her why he had killed Claire. Yes, Kearse was right. It was Maya who called Joe that night, not the other way around. I know what you did, she had said.
What are you talking about?
I have proof. She told Joe to meet her in that spot in Central Park. She arrived early and cased the area. She spotted two street punks, she would later learn their names were Emilio Rodrigo and Fred Caton, walking past Bethesda Fountain. She could see from the way Rodrigo moved that he was carrying a weapon. Perfect. Fall guys who could never be convicted. When they met up, she gave Joe every chance. Why did you kill Claire?
I thought you said you have proof, Maya. You have nothing.
I will find proof. I won't rest. I will make your life hell. It was then that Joe pulled out the loaded Smith & Wesson 686 he'd found in the safe's hidden compartment. He was smiling at her. That was what she thought, anyway. It was probably too dark to see that, and her eyes were drawn to the gun. But right now, as she relived what had happened, she could swear Joe was smiling. He aimed the gun at the center of her chest. Whatever she had thought before, all that talk about what she knew, it fled out the window at the sight of the man she'd pledged to love forever, pointing a loaded gun at her. She had known, and yet she hadn't believed it, accepted it, not really. It was all a mistake, and somehow forcing his hand like this would show her what she had missed, how she got it wrong. Joe, the father of her child, wasn't a murderer. She hadn't shared her bed and her heart with a killer who tortured and murdered her sister. There was still a chance that somehow it could all be explained away. Until he pulled the trigger. Now, sitting in that foyer in the dark, Maya closed her eyes. She could still remember the look on Joe's face when the gun didn't go off. He pulled the trigger again, then again. I removed the firing pin.
What?
I took the pin off the hammer so it couldn't fire.
It doesn't matter, Maya. You'll never prove I killed her.
You're right.
That was when Maya took out her other Smith & Wesson, the same one Joe had used to kill Claire, and shot him 3 times. She intentionally missed killing him with the first two. She was an expert markswoman. Most street punk robbers were not. So death from a single shot would be too obvious. Kearse.
The first bullet hit your husband's left shoulder. The second hit landed in the right tangent of his clavicle.
She'd worn a trench coat and gloves she'd bought for cash at a Salvation Army store. That was where any powder residue would end up. She ripped them off and threw them in a bin over the wall and onto Fifth Avenue. They wouldn't be found, but if they were and someone decided to test them for powder residue, big deal. They couldn't be traced to her. She bent down now and hugged Joe as he died, making sure to get plenty of his blood on her shirt. She put both guns in her handbag. Then she stumbled back toward Bethesda Fountain.
Help! Please! Someone! My husband's!
No one searched her. Why would they? She was a victim. At first, everyone was concerned with her possible injuries and finding the killers. The confusion paid off. She had been prepared to dump the handbag somewhere. There was nothing in it but the weapons, but in the end, there had been no need. She just held on to them and eventually took them home. She dumped the murder weapon in a river. She put the firing pin back on the hammer of the registered Smith & Wesson and put it back in the safe. That was the one Kearse took and tested. Maya knew that the ballistics test would confirm her innocence and confuse the police. The same gun had killed Joe and Claire. Maya had a rock-solid alibi for Claire's death. She was serving overseas, ergo there was no way she could be the killer of either. She didn't like the idea of putting two innocents, Emilio Rodrigo and Fred Caton, through the police rigmarole, but one of them had indeed been carrying. She also knew that with her own testimony about them wearing ski masks, the charges would never stick. They would never go down for the crime. Compared to what she had done in the past, the collateral damage to those two was negligible. The case was all an unsolvable mess, which is what she wanted. Claire had been murdered, and her murderer had been punished. The end. It was justice of sorts. Maya didn't know everything, but she knew enough. She and her daughter would be safe. And then that nanny cam video changed everything yet again. From her seat in the foyer, Maya heard the car pull up. She stayed in the chair. The front door opened. She could hear Judith talking about how boring the event had been. Neil was with her, so was Caroline. The three walked in together. Judith flipped on the lights and gasped out loud. Maya just sat there.
"My God," Judith said. "You scared me half to death. What are you doing here, Maya?"
"Occam's razor," Maya said.
"Pardon me?"
Among competing hypotheses, the one with the fewest assumptions should be selected. Maya smiled. In short, the simplest answer is usually the most likely. Joe didn't survive the shooting. You just wanted me to believe that. Judith looked at her two children and then turned back to Maya. "You set up that nanny cam stunt, Judith. You told Rose's family that I killed Joe, but there was no way to prove it. So you wanted to shake the tree a little." Judith didn't bother denying it.
"And what if I did?" Her voice was pure ice. "There's no law against trying to capture a killer, is there?"
"None that I'm aware of," Maya agreed. "I had an idea right from the start, of course. You're manipulative. You spent your career doing mind tricks."
"They were psychological experiments."
"Semantics. But I saw Joe die. I knew that he couldn't be alive."
"Ah, but it was dark," Judith said. "You could have been mistaken. You tricked Joe in some way, got him to go to that spot in the park. He could have tricked you back, replaced your bullets with blanks, something like that.
But he didn't." Neil cleared his throat.
"What do you want, Maya?"
Maya ignored him, keeping her eyes on Judith.
Even if I didn't buy that he was alive, even if I didn't crack under the pressure and confess, you knew I'd react.
Yes.
I'd figure that someone was screwing with me. I'd start looking into it. Maybe I'd misstep and you could nail me for the murder. I'd trip up somehow. Plus, you all needed to find out what I knew. And you all played your parts for Mommy's little psychological experiment. Caroline fed me those lies about thinking her brothers were alive and that Kearse was on the family payroll. Complete fabrications. But it was a lot of things coming at me. The nanny cam, the missing clothes, the phone calls. Anyone would start to question their sanity. So I did. I would have to have been insane to not at least entertain the idea that I was losing my mind.
Judith smiled at her.
Why are you here, Maya?
I have a question for you, Judith. She waited. How did you know I killed Joe?
So you admit it.
Sure. But how did you know it? Maya looked over at Neil, then at Caroline. Did she tell you how, Caroline?
Caroline frowned and turned to her mother.
I just knew, Judith said. A mother knows.
No, Judith. You knew I killed him because you knew I had a motive. Caroline said.
What is she talking about?
Joe murdered my sister.
That's not true,
Caroline said, her voice that of a petulant child. Joe killed Claire, Maya said, and your mother knew.
Mom?
Judith's eyes were blazing.
Claire stole from us, she said.
Caroline.
Mom? More than that, Claire tried to destroy us all, the entire Burkett name and fortune. All Joe did was try to stop her. He tried to reason with her.
He tortured her, Maya said.
He panicked, that I will admit. She wouldn't tell him what she'd done. She wouldn't give him back the information. I'm not condoning his behavior, but your sister started this. She tried to destroy this family. You, Maya, should understand. She was the enemy. You attack the enemy with full force. You fight back with whatever you have. You never show mercy.
Maya felt the rage, but she wouldn't let it consume her.
You stupid, evil woman.
Hey.
It was Neil coming to his mother's defense.
That's enough.
You don't get it, do you, Neil? You think Joe was protecting the family fortune? That it was about the EAC Pharmaceuticals stuff?
Neil looked at his mother in a way that confirmed that Maya was right. Maya almost burst out laughing. She turned to Judith.
That's what Joe told you, right? Claire had gotten the goods on your pharmaceutical scam? And with everything coming down now around you, you, Neil, no longer trusted Mommy's plan. You panicked and sent those kidnappers after me. You wanted to see what I knew. And you told the guys about my mental state. You told them that if they said Joe was waiting for me, I would what, crumble?
Neil stared at her with undisguised hatred.
You'd weaken, at least.
Judith closed her eyes. Stupid. She muttered.
Joe is waiting. That's what the guy said.
And that was your mistake, Neil. You see, if Joe was behind it, if Joe had sent guys after me, he would have made sure they knew that I was armed. Those guys didn't.
Maya.
It was Judith.
You killed my son.
He killed my sister.
He's dead. He can't be prosecuted. But three witnesses heard your confession. We'll make a case.
You don't understand, Maya said. Joe didn't just kill my sister. He killed Theo Mora.
That was a hazing incident gone wrong.
He killed Tom Douglas.
You have no proof of that.
And he killed his own brother.
Everyone stopped then. For a few seconds, there was dead silence, that kind of heavy silence like even the furniture was holding its breath.
Mom?
It was Caroline.
That's not true, is it? Of course it's not, Judith said.
It's true, Maya said. Joe killed Andrew.
Caroline turned to Judith.
Mom?
Don't listen to her, it's a lie.
But there was a quake in Judith's voice now.
I visited Christopher Swain today, Judith. He told me that Andrew was cracking, that on the boat, Andrew told Joe that he was going to turn them all in for what they did to Theo. Then Andrew went up alone to the top deck, and Joe followed him.
Silence.
Caroline started crying. Neil looked at his mother as though pleading for help. That doesn't mean Joe killed him, Judith said. You may believe it does in some horrible fantasy in your diseased head, but you yourself told me what happened. You told me the truth.
Maya nodded.
Andrew jumped.
He committed suicide.
Yes.
And Joe saw it. That was what he told me.
Yes, of course.
Except that's not what happened.
Joe and Andrew went up on that deck at 1 a.m.
That's right.
But nobody reported Andrew missing until the next morning.
Maya tilted her head.
If Joe had seen his brother jump, wouldn't he have sounded the alarm right then and there?
Judith's eyes went wide as though she'd taken a punch to the gut.
Maya saw it now.
Judith had been in denial too.
She knew, yet she hadn't known. It was amazing how much we can blind ourselves to such obvious truths.
Judith dropped to her knees.
Mom?
Neil asked.
Judith started to cry like a wounded animal.
It can't be true.
It is true, Maya said, standing up now. Joe killed Theo Mora. He killed Andrew. He killed Claire. He killed Tom Douglas. How many more did he kill, Judith? He took a baseball bat to some kid's head in the eighth grade. He tried to burn a kid alive in high school over a girl. Joseph Sr. saw it. That's why he gave control of the company to Neil.
Judith just kept shaking her head.
You raised and protected and nurtured a killer.
And you married him.
Maya nodded.
I did.
You really think he could have fooled you?
I don't think. I know it.
Judith, still on her knees, looked up at her.
You executed him.
Maya said nothing.
It wasn't self-defense. You could have brought him in.
Yes.
But you chose to murder him instead.
You would have tried to protect him again, Judith.
I couldn't have that. Maya took a step toward the front door. Neil and Caroline moved backward.
But it will all come out now.
If it does, Judith said, you'll go to jail for life.
Yeah, maybe. But the EAC Pharmaceuticals thing will come out now, too.
It's all over now. There's nothing left.
Wait, Judith said.
She stood. Maya stopped.
Maybe we can make a deal.
Neil said,
Mom, what are you talking about?
Hush.
She looked up at Maya.
You wanted justice for your sister. You got it. Now we all come together.
Mom?
Just listen to me.
She put her hands on Maya's shoulders.
We blame the EAC Pharmaceuticals scandal on Joe. We suggest that maybe that was what led to his murder. Do you see? Nobody has to know the truth. Justice has been served. And maybe you were right, Maya. I'm Eve. I raised Cain to kill Abel. I should have known. I don't know if I can live with myself or if I can ever make amends, but maybe if we all just keep our heads, I can still save my other two children. And I can save you too, Maya.
It's too late for deals, Judith, Maya said.
She's right, Mom.
It was Neil. Maya turned to him and saw that he was pointing a gun in her direction.
But I have a better idea, he said to Maya. You stole Hector's truck. You broke into our house. You are, I'm sure, armed. You admitted killing Joe, and now you are going to kill us. Only I shoot you in time and save us.
We still pin the EAC scandal on Joe, but now we don't spend our lives looking over our shoulders.
Neil glanced at his mother. Judith smiled. Then Caroline nodded. The whole family had come together. Neil fired the gun 3 times.
Poetic, Maya thought. That was how many times she'd shot Joe.
Maya collapsed to the ground, arms and legs spread. She was on her back. She couldn't move. She expected to feel cold, but that wasn't the case. The voices came to her in quick snatches.
No one will ever know.
Check her pockets.
She doesn't have a gun.
Maya smiled and looked toward the fireplace.
What's she smiling about?
What's that above the fireplace? It looks like...
Oh, no.
Maya's eyes blinked and then closed. She waited for the sounds, the copters, the gunfire, the screaming, to begin their assault. But they didn't come. Not this time. Not ever again. There was darkness and silence, and then, finally, peace. Chapter 34. 25 years later. The elevator doors are about to close when I hear a woman call out my name.
Shane?
I stick my hand out to hold the elevator.
Hello, Eileen.
She rushes in, smiling, and kisses me on the cheek.
Been a long time.
Too long.
You look good, Shane.
So do you, Eileen.
I heard you had a knee replacement. Are you okay?
I wave off her concern. We both smile.
It's a good day. How are your kids?
I ask.
Great. Did I tell you Missy is teaching at Vassar?
She was always a smart one, like her mother.
Eileen puts her hand on my arm and leaves it there. We are both still single, but we'd had our moment way back when. Enough said there. We ride the rest of the way in silence. By now, you've all seen the video from that nanny cam Maya put above the Farnwood fireplace. They used to call it going viral when something got that big, so I'll tell you the rest of what I know. That night, after Maya convinced me to keep an eye on Hector and Isabella, she called someone who worked with Corey the Whistle. I never learned the person's name. No one did. They set up a live feed using the nanny cam. In short, the world was able to watch everything that went on in the Burkett house that night. They watched it live. Corey the Whistle was a pretty big deal already. This was in the days when that kind of transparency was in its infancy. But after that night, his site became one of the biggest on the web. I obviously had a personal beef against it for putting our mission up. But in the end, Corey Rudzinski used the publicity Maya got him that night to do a lot of good. Scared, wounded, powerless people who'd been afraid to tell the truth suddenly had the courage to come forward. Corrupt governments and businesses toppled. So in the end, that had been Maya's idea. Expose the truth for the world to see in live time. It was just that nobody expected that ending. A murder, right before your eyes. The elevator doors open.
After you,
I say to Eileen.
Thank you, Shane.
As I follow her down the corridor, still limping with the new knee, I can feel my heart swelling in my chest. I admit that as I get older, I get more emotional. I'm more prone to cry at life's good moments. When I turn the corner and enter the hospital room, the first person I see is Daniel Walker. He's 39 years old now and stands 6'4". He works 3 floors up as a radiologist. Next to him is his sister, Alexa. She's 37 with a little one of her own. Alexa does digital design, though I don't really know exactly what that is. They both greet me with hugs and kisses. Eddie is there too, and his wife, Selena. Eddie was widowed nearly 10 years before he remarried.
Selena is a wonderful woman, and I'm happy that Eddie found happiness after Claire. Eddie and I shake hands and do that guy thing where we half-hug. Then I look at the bed where Lily is holding her new baby girl. Kapow. My heart explodes in my chest. I don't know if Maya went to the Burkettes that night knowing that she was going to die. She left her gun in the car. Some theorize she did that so the Burkettes wouldn't be able to claim self-defense. Maybe. Maya left me a letter that she wrote the night before her death. She left Eddie one, too. She wanted Eddie to raise Lily if anything happened to her. Eddie did that in spectacular fashion. She wrote that she hoped Daniel and Alexa would be good older siblings to her daughter. They were that and then some. I was to be Lily's godfather, Eileen the godmother. Maya wanted us to stay in her life. Eileen and I did that, but with Eddie, Daniel, Alexa, and then Selena, I don't think Lily needed us. I still stay. Because I love Lily with a ferocity a man usually saves only for his own child. And maybe I stay for something else. Lily is like her mother. She looks like her mother. She acts like her mother. Being around her, doing things for her, stay with me here, is the only way I get to keep Maya with me. That may be selfish, I don't know. But I miss Maya. Sometimes, like when I used to drop Lily off after a baseball game or movie, I would almost feel like I was rushing somewhere to tell Maya all about the day and assure her that Lily was doing well. Silly, right? From her bed, Lily looks up and smiles at me. It is her mother's smile, though I rarely saw it beam like this.
Look, Shane.
Lily doesn't remember her mother. That kills me. You done good, kid, I say. People talk about Maya's crimes, of course. She did kill civilians. She did, whatever justification you might give, execute a man. Had she survived, she would have gone to prison, no question about it. So maybe she chose death over life in prison. Maybe she chose to make sure the Burkettes went down and couldn't be in her child's life over rotting in a cell and taking the risk. I don't know anymore. But Maya claimed to me that she never felt guilty about what she did overseas. I don't know about that either. Those horrible flashbacks tore through her every night. People who feel no remorse aren't haunted by their actions, are they? She was a good person. I don't care what they say. Eddie told me once that he sometimes felt as though death was a part of Maya, that death followed her. It's an odd way of putting it, but I think I get it. After what happened in Iraq, Maya couldn't silence the voices. Death had stayed with her. She tried to rush forward, but death would tap her on the shoulder. It wouldn't leave. I think maybe Maya saw that. I think, more than anything else, she wanted to make sure death didn't follow Lily. Maya didn't leave a letter for Lily to open at a certain age or anything like that. She hadn't told Eddie how to raise her or why she had chosen him. She just knew. She knew that he would be the right choice. And he was. Years ago, Eddie asked me for my take on what to tell Lily about her biological parents and when. Neither of us had a clue. Maya often said that kids didn't come with instruction manuals. She had left it up to us. She trusted that we would do what was best for Lily when the time came. Eventually, when Lily was old enough to understand, we told her. The ugly truth, we decided, was better than the fanciful lie. Dean Vanek, Lily's husband, bounces into the room and kisses his wife.
Hey, Shane.
Congrats, Dean.
Thanks.
Dean is military. I bet Maya would like that. The happy couple sit on the bed and marvel at their child the way new parents are supposed to. I look back at Eddie. He has tears in his eyes. I nod.
Grandpa,
I say to him. Eddie can't answer. He deserves this moment. He gave Lily a good childhood, and I'm grateful. I will always be there for him. I will always be there for Daniel and Alexa. I will always be there for Lily. Maya knew that, of course.
Shane?
Yes, Lily?
Would you like to hold her?
I don't know, I'm kind of clumsy. Lily won't have any of that.
You'll do just fine.
Bossing me around, like her mother. I come to the bed and she hands me the baby, making sure to put the tiny head in the crook of my arm. I stare down at her in something approaching awe.
We named her Maya,
Lily says. I nod now because I can't speak. Maya. My Maya, the old Maya, and I saw a lot of people die. We used to talk about how dead was dead. That was it, Maya used to say. You die, it's over. But right now, I'm not sure. Right now, I look down and I think maybe Maya and I got that one wrong. She's here. I know it.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Fool Me Once by Harlan Coben. Performed by January Lavoie. Directed by Lewis Milgram. Performance copyright 2016 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225. Or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.